You are Locked On Bears, your daily Chicago Bears podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Nick Foles' restructured contract is a win for the Chicago Bears in the first year and concerning in the remaining 2 years of the deal. Welcome into the Locked On Bears podcast. I'm your host, Lauren Cox. I'm an analyst for Pro Football Focus, and I cover the Chicago Bears for BearsWire. I'm here to bring you your daily Chicago Bears news and analysis. Today we're looking at Nick Foles' contract to look into the details of how the Bears restructured it to make things more affordable in 2020, but much less flexible in 2021 and 2022. We'll also touch on how this quarterback competition might just look between Mitch Trubisky and Nick Foles from a logistical standpoint, and what we learned about Nick Foles from his conversation on Periscope live with former Bears backup Chase Daniel. NFL insider Ian Rappaport confirmed the details of Nick Foles' renegotiated and restructured contract with the Chicago Bears. And it was widely hailed as a win for Chicago. And when you look at it in terms of 2020, you can see why the Bears liked what they were getting out of the deal. Nick Foles was set to cost upward of $15+ million in 2020 under the contract he had signed with the Jacksonville Jaguars. But now in Chicago, his base salary for that deal reduces to just $8 million, freeing up an extra $7 million in initial salary cap space for the Chicago Bears compared to what they were originally set to inherit from the Jacksonville Jaguars. So you can immediately point to that and see it as a big win. Originally, he was owed about $57 million over the next 3 years, and the Bears reduced that to be $24 million over the next 3 years, with a base salary just set to be $8 million in each of those three seasons. But that overlooks the most important part of any NFL contract nowadays, and that is the guaranteed money. And that's where this deal really hurts the Bears still, because they were really unable to reduce any of the guaranteed money that he was still owed, and all they did was reduce the non-guaranteed money that he may or may not have even made under his contract in Jacksonville. So he is still owed $21 million. I think it's technically just below that, but rounded up to $21 million guaranteed over the next three seasons. So the Chicago Bears will be paying Nick Foles $21 million guaranteed over the course of this contract. That will not change based on this renegotiation and that restructured. So his entire salary for 2020 will be fully guaranteed. And then to get to that $21 million number, likely his entire salary next year, 2021, will be fully guaranteed. And then about half of his salary in 2022 will be fully guaranteed. And so that means the Bears are paying him that money, whether he's producing on the field or not. And that's what's so concerning for me about this deal. That yes, it was very good that they got the salary cap number down so they'd have enough room on the roster right now. And you can sort of point to that as to saying that's why they gave up the fourth round pick to get him. But they're locked into paying Nick Foles this money over the next three seasons. They can't release him after this season and save anything. They will still have to pay him $8 million in 2021, regardless of what happens. And that's hard for me to sit with when I look at this deal compared to other potential quarterback options available. Now, the one underlying, or there's a couple of underlying clauses and factors in this contract that can help the Bears, and there's another clause that can hurt the Bears. So Nick Foles has the option to void the two final seasons of the contract if he performs well in 2020. So if he comes into Chicago, starts, and has a big season, he can void those last two deals and become a free agent and potentially sign another bigger contract elsewhere, essentially preventing the Bears from being able to keep him at that $8 million salary, which you know, is a way for them to get out of it, but also mostly to be a safeguard for Nick Foles. But then the other side of this is he can earn $6 million in incentives each season that carry over to each year. So if he hits all of the incentives, which might be unlikely, he could earn up to $14 million this year and each of the following season and add another $18 million worth of value to the contract that sort of starts to eat away at all of this supposed saved money from the renegotiation from Jacksonville. Most of it is still in place for Nick Foles to earn back if he wants to, and if he doesn't, then void the remaining 2 years of the deal. So there's really, it looks like, two main outcomes of this contract. Either Nick Foles plays really well, earns a bunch of incentives, and then opts out of the contract and hits the open market, or Nick Foles doesn't play very well and then is still owed $8 million this year, $8 million next year, and another half of a year guaranteed over the next 3 years, and the Bears are stuck paying for a quarterback that hasn't been performing very well, and they had to give up a fourth-round pick to get him. So neither one gives the Bears very much security or flexibility in the long term at this quarterback position, and that's why it's hard to call this renegotiation a win beyond just that first year of savings. Really, it shows the Bears are all in on 2020 and going after that first year to really maximize what they're going to get out of the quarterback position and the rest of the roster. So up next on the podcast, we'll look at what this Bears quarterback competition might look like and how the Bears are going to try and evaluate which guy should be their starter, especially with everything a little bit up in the air as of now. Keep it locked right here on Locked On Bears. Nick Foles' overall lower salary makes it much easier for the Chicago Bears to really sell the open quarterback competition, that it's truly up for grabs, and it's not just Nick Foles was brought in to be the instant starter, but they can sort of more legitimately say, hey, we're going to give Mitch every opportunity to win. We're going to give Nick every opportunity to win. And may the best quarterback take the starting job. You know, whereas if Foles had come in with that $15 million salary, or if they had traded for Andy Dalton's $17 million salary, or if they had signed Teddy Bridgewater at $20 million a year, I don't know that they could have afforded any of those numbers. But if they had, it's sort of hard to say, yeah, we brought this guy in and we're happy with him being a backup, right? I mean, if you're paying somebody, you know, up $10 plus million a year, there's sort of an expectation that they should be your starting quarterback. And it's even just hard to swallow that money to leave them on the bench if they aren't good enough. And so to some extent, the Foles contract helps set expectations as far as, at least initially, where Foles and Trubisky stand. They're actually making pretty similar amounts of money this season, which makes it an even easier way to sort of put them head-to-head. But I'm interested to see, first, how the quarterback competition gets going, but then also how the Bears plan to evaluate it once we get closer to the regular season. So, of course, right now, the NFL is trying to go full steam ahead, despite the rest of the world pretty well being put on pause. The NFL wants to do the draft on time, even if it's remote and without fans in person. And so far, they're pushing forward with that. But it's not really clear whether there's going to be any chance of mini camps happening when they are supposed to in May, or if that then pushes back training camp and pushes back the start of the regular season, or if they would just sort of do some sort of virtual remote type mini camp or some sort of way for allowing coaches to interact with their players and actually coach them remotely in some way, shape, or form. Like, there's rules in the NFL offseason for how much interaction coaches and players can have in football capacities. Like, they're not banned from texting each other and saying, hey, how you doing? How are the wife and kids? But there's certain limitations about what types of coaching and actual football conversations and they can do. And so I wonder if the NFL could, you know, if they're trying to get some sort of regular schedule going, could they do a sort of like remote coaching sessions with players and coaches that they can't necessarily all get on a field and practice together, but the coach could be allotted a certain amount of time to call and go through tape and practice sort of things with guys just to give them some sort of development time over the offseason. I mean, that's going to be the first hurdle in this quarterback competition. When will they both be able to get on the field at the same time to be able to have the coaches evaluate their ability to throw the ball, read the defense, to run the offense, et cetera, et cetera? And that's part of what made Nick Foles a more attractive candidate for the Bears, because he knows Matt Nagy, and he knows offensive coordinator Bill Lazor, and he knows quarterbacks coach John DeFilippo. So all of these guys are familiar with Nick. There's not really a getting to know each other kind of phase. They already know him. He already knows the offensive system for the most part. There's going to be little tweaks here and there from transitioning from Philadelphia to Kansas City to Chicago, and now with a new offensive coordinator, and now the quarterbacks coach from last year, Dave Ragone, acting as the passing game coordinator. They're going to make little tweaks and changes to the offense every off season. So Foles will have to get up to speed a little bit on that, but he certainly comes in much more advanced than Andy Dalton would have necessarily, or Teddy Bridgewater, or Cam Newton, or insert pretty much any other non-Andy Reid quarterback in, and same results. So to that extent, it gives Foles some ability to overcome the obstacles that everyone is facing in terms of scheduling. But even when they do all get on the field together at some point, you know, I picture training camp, whenever training camp does happen this season. I'm curious as to what factors will decide this quarterback competition. I mean, can you tell effectively which quarterback is truly head and shoulders better than the other in practice situations? I mean, are you evaluating, you know, like we talk about Trubisky needs to master coverages. Defenses in practice aren't necessarily disguising a lot of coverages and throwing a lot of different things at the quarterback, because they have to work on their fundamentals too. You know, they have to get the simple stuff down for themselves before they can start tweaking and working on more of the more difficult things that they try and throw at opposing quarterbacks. So they can't just jump right in and go 100% full game plan mode strategy against Trubisky every day in practice. So is he going to get tested in the ways that the Bears need to see him improve? Or is he going to be able to sort of sit back and be a confident practice quarterback that then gets into games and has some of the live struggles that we've seen over the last three seasons? And same sort of thing with Nick Foles, in the sense that he knows the system, so he should be fairly comfortable operating it in practice, but we won't really know for sure until we get to live game scenarios just whether or not this is the right situation around him to get the good Nick Foles that we've seen for, you know, 13 to 16 games of his career, or if we're going to get more of the bad Nick Foles that we've seen on multiple teams outside of this Andy Reid offensive system. So I don't know how they're supposed to determine that in practice so that fully. I mean, there's obviously little things you can take away from practice, but it's hard to really decide a quarterback competition based on practices. So then does that force Matt Nagy to have to play his guys more in the preseason? That was obviously something he tried to avoid as much as possible in his first two seasons, to the point of criticism when it came to Mitchell Trubisky's development. But now, do you feel like you need to see Trubisky and Foles running the preseason offense against a real opponent that's doing more to try and stop him and create these live game situations? So does that mean we'll have to see more of both of these quarterbacks in the preseason? Or is Nagy going to be, dare I say, stubborn about it? I mean, I'm not the expert on directing a quarterback competition, but you would think more preseason playing time would help give you more information to try and decide which of your quarterbacks is going to be the best one. Whereas if you're just going with practice, you know, do you have all of the best possible information to make that decision? It'll be interesting to see how Nagy handles this in the light of all the other obstacles going on in the world around us, in addition to just trying to run a regular quarterback competition, even if everything else was completely normal. But of course, nothing is normal right now, and that's partially why former Bears backup quarterback Chase Daniel hosted a Periscope, Twitter, Facebook live chat with Nick Foles and talked a little bit about his career and his background and just getting us a little bit more behind the scenes and getting to know Nick Foles more as a person. So still to come on the podcast, we'll hear some of what the new Bears quarterback had to say about the time he almost retired earlier in his career and what led up to him throwing 7 touchdowns in a game, tying an NFL record. That's next on Locked On Bears. So Chase Daniel is sort of preparing for a broadcasting career before his playing career is over, and he's been doing some off-season live stream conversations with, you know, teammates and friends and fellow players and things like that. And so just earlier this week, he brought on his former teammate and buddy Nick Foles to kind of chat about life and football and a lot of these things. And you might be disappointed that they really didn't talk much at all about the Chicago Bears. And to some extent, I think both players have probably been told by the organizations not to talk about the Chicago Bears or now the Detroit Lions that Chase Daniel will be playing for next season. But they did talk a little bit about some of Nick Foles' past times through his career. And one of the interesting things they got into was the record-setting or record-tying performance Nick Foles put together against the Oakland Raiders in week 9 of that 2013 season that was really Foles' big breakout under Chip Kelly. And Foles talks a lot about, you know, his religious and his faith. He and Chase Daniel are both very religious people. And so there's some of that is sprinkled in between here, but there's still some good sort of football analysis as far as what he was going through, what his relationship was like with Chip Kelly, and what kind of happened in that heroic game.
The week before that game, we played the Giants, and I was actually in concussion protocol from a concussion I suffered against the Dallas Cowboys the week prior, early in that game. And I remember going to the Oakland game. Obviously, it's a cross-country trip. I think our offense hadn't scored a point in 2 weeks, so we were really, really struggling offensively. And, you know, it was sort of one of those things where I went to Chip before the game and, you know, there were some different things with the reads and way I played that I felt uncomfortable with. And I basically asked him, like, hey, like, this is how I see these plays. What do you think? And, you know, he basically said, like, you have the green light. Go do your thing. Read it how you want to read it. Let's see what happens. And I remember going into that game and, you know, I was really struggling, which I've gone through a couple of times in my career. And really the final time that changed everything was after the year in St. Louis. But that was later. Before the Oakland game, like, I was struggling. I was like, man, God, it was another moment where I'm like, man, am I really doing the right thing? Like, do you want me playing football? Like, you know, is this what you want me to do? Or do you want me to do something else? And I think there's a lot of guys or gals that go through their vocation and their job. It doesn't matter if you're an NFL athlete or you're doing something else where you're like, God, is this what I'm supposed to be doing? And I remember going to the game and literally, you know, it was 7 touchdowns in less than 3 quarters. And I had just come back from a concussion and you really don't expect much. You're just like, man, I just want to try to get some completion and get us going and help us as a team. We've really been struggling. But it was that moment where I threw the 7th one. I forget what point in the 3rd quarter. And I literally like sat out part of the 3rd and into the 4th, like didn't even play the 4th quarter.
They should have let you get the whole record to yourself.
We were on fire, but it was one of those things where, like, it was crazy. Like, I would throw balls and the DB would trip and fall, stuff like that. Like, it was like, what is going on? And I remember going in the locker room after the game and just sitting in the locker and sort of, like, sitting there and just thanking the Lord, but then just thinking, like, I think you want me to play football because that is ridiculous. And I remember going to my dad right there and just being like, man, I don't know what to say other than, like, the good Lord just showed like he's real because I can't do that. I don't have the ability to throw 7 touchdowns in a game. I know everyone's going to write about it and say those things, but I'm telling you, I don't have the ability to do that.
What's endearing about Nick Foles there, right, is his acknowledgement of how spectacular that was, but also how fluky the 7 touchdown game was and how he sort of is willing to admit how that's not something he can just do all the time. And it sort of calls into question, you know, the same sort of thing with his Super Bowl MVP run. You know, he said, I'm not a guy who can throw 7 touchdowns. Is he a guy that can play at that Super Bowl MVP level consistently? Probably not, but that doesn't mean Nick Foles can't still be a very good quarterback and recreate some of the success he's had in his earlier seasons. Because he's overcome quite a bit, I think, internally and personally, going through the struggles that he had, you know, later in Philadelphia, and then he spent a year with the St. Louis Rams, still in St. Louis at the time, in 2015 when he was their starter. He started 11 games, went 4-7, ended up in Kansas City the next year before returning to Philadelphia, then Jacksonville, etc. But that was the year he kind of pointed to in St. Louis as really being the hardest for him in his career, and this was the year when he thought about retiring afterward and just sort of ending his career at age 26. He would have just turned 27 in the immediate offseason following that year, but it would have been a very young and perhaps surprising retirement for a quarterback that had been starting, you know, each of the previous three seasons, albeit with some ups and downs along the way. And it's interesting to sort of hear him talk about where he was mentally at that time and why he decided to keep moving forward.
We needed a lot longer to talk about it, but when I was going to step away from the game, I think the thing I struggled with was I wasn't being myself in the sense of how I did interviews. You know, you're told basically like what to say and what not to say, so you can't show your personality in interviews, which mine is really not like getting to know the reporter and respecting the reporter. And if they ask a dumb question, which happens, especially in Philadelphia, Les Bowen, and I know if he's listening, he's probably laughing like, man, I can't believe you called me out on this. But like, I wouldn't be afraid to say, Les, you know, that's a silly question. But like, they like that because you're a person. You're treating them as a person instead of getting angry and upset. And that was what I realized after I was going to step back, because I went through like the wilderness, as you would say, after my year in St. Louis, to where I wasn't going to play anymore. And then when I decided to come back and play, it was solely to glorify God and all I do. And that's not necessarily like hitting everyone over the head with the Bible. What I'm saying is like, I want to live it out. I want my actions to speak louder.
Again, that audio is from a live stream conversation with Chase Daniel and Nick Foles, but I thought it was a nice peek behind the curtain, a little bit more about who Nick Foles is as a person and some of what we can expect from him in this backup and also competition role in Chicago, because we haven't really gotten much access to any of these new Bears players up to this point. So I'm glad Chase Daniel was able to help us out a little bit with that. Even if they didn't really talk Bears football and Bears offense and quarterback competition specifically, it still taught us a little bit something about Nick Foles and a little bit more about what he's been through, because I had totally forgotten that he had potentially talked about retiring. I remember that being something that came out a little bit later immediately, but you know, I wasn't covering the Rams or the Chiefs, and Foles was just sort of another quarterback elsewhere in the league. I did remember that 7-touchdown game from the Raiders, but it's funny to hear him talk about how he really didn't feel like he was doing all that much special. It just all kept working out in this great way, and he wasn't really sure why, but he wasn't going to question it, and he could have potentially broken the record had they let him. But we're going to hear a lot more from Nick Foles as this offseason goes on, and we'll keep you up to date with all the latest and greatest we hear from these Bears quarterbacks. So make sure that you are subscribed to the Locked On Bears podcast wherever it is that you listen to podcasts. We'd also really appreciate it if you just tell one friend, one fellow Chicago Bears fan, about the Locked On Bears podcast. Help them get through these strange coronavirus times we're all living through. Help them get a little bit of their own daily Chicago Bears talk and help bring us all a little bit closer together, even when we have to be farther apart. In the coming days, Brad Spielberger from OverTheCap.com will be coming on the podcast, and we're going to talk about some of these Bears contracts in a little bit more detail, look at where the Bears salary cap space stands as of now and what else they could do with Allen Robinson's contract and any other ways they could free up some cap space and how some of those deals might affect this Bears team longer term. So you're going to want to come back for more of that in the future, and we'll start turning our attention even more toward the NFL draft in the coming weeks as well. Make sure you have everything you need to know for draft day, what the Bears could possibly do in that second round, and even a little bit of some late round options as well. We won't get too deep in the weeds as far as knowing all 350 players that are going to be drafted, but we'll make sure you're ready for draft day, and we'll always make sure you're ready to bear down.